This show is not a substitute for professional counseling. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Further, any opinions heard on this show are not meant to replace professional healthcare and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you are encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, it's a little after 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7, the Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, in particular UA students. And you can listen to us live each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu, or you can download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. Tonight we'll be taking questions via email, so if you have questions for myself or my guest, email the questions to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu, and we'll take your questions and try to answer those on the air. Let me remind you, this is not a call-in show as of now, but beginning in November, we will go to a call-in format, so we'll start giving out the telephone number and ask you to call in November, and I'll keep reminding you that each week. So, but right now, we're not call-in, so don't call into the station right now. But you can always email us questions, like I mentioned, to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Also, if you have ideas for upcoming shows, we've already got the shows planned for the remainder of the fall semester, but we definitely need some new ideas for spring semester. So send those to me, and you can send those to the email that I just gave out. And I'll be giving that email out periodically throughout the show in case you want to send me some ideas. The topic of tonight's show is very interesting and one that a lot of people really just don't like to discuss. It's about grieving college students. Loss is a construct that traditionally applies to death losses, but can also be applied to many other challenging life experiences such as graduation, breakups, divorce, and educational transitions. My guest tonight is live with us on the telephone from Indiana. She's at Purdue University, Dr. Heather Servati-Saib, and she leads the grief and loss research team at Purdue University. The team aims to conduct research that will assist society in gaining a better understanding of the idiosyncratic experiences of grieving individuals. And it's important to note that the team defines loss in a broad way because grief entails the multidimensional responses individuals experience following death and non-death losses. Dr. Servati-Saib, are you there?
I am here.
Did I get your name correct? Did I pronounce it correctly?
You did perfectly.
It's a mouthful, and so was that sentence. Can you tell us?
Students call me Dr. SS. It's a lot easier.
Dr. SS, if you don't mind, I'll call you that also.
That's just fine.
Tell me a little bit about yourself and your credentials and really your interest in this topic. How did you get interested in this topic?
Well, To be specific about my credentials, I am a counseling psychologist, and here in Indiana, I'm a licensed psychologist for individual practice. But my primary work here is at the university as a professor in the doctoral program in counseling psychology, where I train psychologists. And this year, I'm also spending almost half of my time in the Honors College at Purdue as the associate dean for student life. So I've been able to implement much of the information that my students and I have gained through our research, which has been great. My interest in the topic of topics of death and dying and also loss in a broad way, I think, has always really been with me. I think initially it was more some non-death loss experiences that I had as a child, but then has just strengthened over time in terms of the really powerful and gratifying experience of doing this work, trying to help people talk about issues that are really difficult to talk about.
And can you tell us a little bit more, describe what non-death loss experiences would be? I kind of mentioned that and touched on that with your introduction, but be a little more specific for our listeners, please?
Sure. Well, I can be very specific, actually, in terms of the work of my research team. Most of us are engaged in either death-related research or non-death-related research. And what that involves is using a gain-loss framework to look at actually almost all significant life events. We've developed a measure, we've developed a framework, and what we look at is how all life events likely somewhere along the line involve both losses and gains. So we don't even just look at it in a loss way. We really look at all life events, regardless of whether or not they're dichotomously desirable or undesirable. We still believe that there will be gains and losses associated with all. Society tends to dichotomize life experiences, and we push back against that to say, actually, it's a lot more complicated than that. You know, we can experience gain and loss at the same time in different life domains connected to any significant life event we face.
Mm-hmm. You know, I first learned about you and your research from a publication that you co-edited several years ago, it looks like, in 2008. But it is, I'm going to have to say, it is one of the best source books for assisting. It's actually called Assisting Bereaved College Students. I refer to it numerous times. It's one of the best source books that I own, to be honest with you. It's just a plethora of information over different, it looks like different, there's different articles by different authors. And a lot of research went in to this manual. I really look at it as a manual almost. And I took a lot of my questions for tonight from this book because it's just so interesting. One of the first things I want to ask you, in the manual, in the source book, you discuss, or the author of the first article actually discusses, manifestations of bereavement in the lives of college students. Can you talk a little bit about how grief affects people, but especially this population?
Absolutely. Well, I want to say, specifically, I like to distinguish grief from mourning. And so to me, grief is the passive and involuntary response to any loss that a person experiences. So you don't choose how you grieve. You know, it's multidimensional. It is emotional. It's cognitive. It's behavioral. It's social. It's physical.
Right.
It's all of those areas and responses. But you don't pick. You don't say, okay, today I'm going to be angry and tomorrow I'm going to be confused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our grief is unique based on who we are as individuals and also based on our unique relationship with the individual who died.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of variability in how people experience grief. To me, mourning is the more active and voluntary aspect where you're working to cope with your grief and cope with the state of having experienced that loss. So it's things you engage in, and often rituals and sort of mourning activities that people engage in, both internally and externally, that's focused on helping them to cope.
So it's more of a choice.
Oh,
I'm sorry. It's more of a choice.
More of a
choice.
Yes, I do think. I think mourning is what we do to try to cope, whereas grief, you know, you can't really choose how you grieve. I mean, any more than you can really choose how you respond to any difficult life event.
Mm-hmm.
We have our responses. We need to honor those responses and the uniqueness of them, I think.
You know, and that's curious because I've never heard it differentiated like that. I've never really even thought about the difference between grief and mourning because I always kind of thought it was the same thing.
Yeah, well, there are people in my field who disagree on the specifics, but in general, there is some distinction between your response and your involuntary sort of multidimensional response and your actions that you can take to make a difference in that experience.
Can you talk a little bit more about, you mentioned the physical effects of grieving or bereavement. Can you talk a little bit about what you have seen in your research, the physical effects on college students, in particular this population?
Well, one of the first things that come to mind, and this is not necessarily in my own research, but sleep is significant.
Yeah.
There is some research by Robert Niemeyer and his team at Memphis that where they have actually found that almost they've been able to show that almost all the other responses, the grief responses, mm-hmm. can even maybe stem from difficulties related to sleep. And they were really specifically looking at college students in mm-hmm. some of that research. And so that is a big one that comes to mind. I think appetite is also, I mean, there's so many aspects to being a college student where, you know, you have freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some structure. You know, the dining halls open at certain times, but you choose when whether you make it, you know, and whether you
right.
go to eat. And when you're grieving, it's very difficult to take care of your physical body. One of the things, I just taught a course recently about loss and looking at the immune functioning, and this is not specific to college students, but it's definitely there. The immune system is affected when we're grieving, almost to the point where a couple of the recommendations I saw in articles, which I'd never seen before,
uh-huh.
was wash your hands a lot.
Huh.
You know, your immune system is going to be affected and you
compromised.
Know,
uh-huh.
Try to work on sleep, try to work on eating, and then really do take care in terms of hygiene and how your immune system is just not functioning at 100%.
What about, you know, that's part of the physical effects. You mentioned many other effects. What do you think is affected the most with college students, or how is it going to show? I guess you could say, would it be the physical, or would it be more behavioral? Or even cognitive?
Well, when we did our most recent book,
uh-huh.
which was a book called We Get It, Voices of Grieving College Students, we really took narratives from college students and then analyzed those narratives for the primary themes that we saw them in them. And I will say the theme that appeared in every single one of the 33 stories that is in that book is feeling isolated, feeling alone.
Feeling alone, mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, and I think they're, all of those domains are affected, no question. But in terms of interpersonal relationships, I think it's a very big issue for college students, because students are in a setting where they're pretty much only around their peers.
Right.
And they're in a developmental place where they're really working to, oftentimes, depending on culture and many other issues, but often working to distance from their families to develop a greater sense of self and to be more connected with their peers. And when they experience a significant death loss, you know, they're really challenged by how much or if to share
mm-hmm.
about that loss with
mm-hmm.
their peers, and then questioning whether or not their peers will be able to be supportive
That's right.
To them.
That's right. I've heard many students who I've worked with, they have told me, I don't want to bring them down. I don't want to bring my friends down. I don't want to be the downer, you know, in the group. So they kind of have to fake it, because they're not, you know, they're not happy. They're mourning, as you say. And so a lot of times they will purposefully isolate themselves because of that.
It's called a double wall.
Mm-hmm.
So the students who are grieving, they don't want to bring people down.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to... yeah, as you say, be a burden. But
right.
they also do question whether or not their peers will be able to be supportive
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
And then you have the non-bereaved peers who are concerned that if they say something, they're going to make it worse.
That's right.
Or they don't know if they can get through their own nervousness and anxiety to actually have the conversations. And so it becomes kind of a double wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to break through.
In your,
the other thing that we found
I'm sorry, go ahead.
In our personal relationships that was a common theme was something that we called forced maturity, where these students, like, I mean, they know about life and death. I mean, their priorities shift. I mean, they look at life in a very different way when they experience
That's right.
a significant death loss, and their peers just can't see that. I mean, many of them said that they wouldn't have been able to understand the depth of grief
mm-hmm.
before they experienced it themselves, and so they know perfectly well that their peers don't have a strong
sense. No, they just cannot relate.
Very different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about those students who act out
mm-hmm.
when they're grieving or when they're mourning, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And I think we have seen less of that in our research, but one finding I'll share that I have been fascinated by, and we don't really have out there in the literature yet, is that we did one study. One of my students did a dissertation, and he used the college student adjustment questionnaire, which
okay.
is a general measure of college student adjustment in the area of social,
mm-hmm.
academic, kind of internal functioning kinds of issues. And then he also used a measure of grief. And he found, actually, that alcohol consumption was not related to adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no relationship, but alcohol intake was related to grief.
Hmm.
And so even though we may see grieving students and not notice that, and they can function, they can be look really adjusted to us.
Right.
But if they are consuming alcohol, that's going to be likely related to their grief,
yeah.
One way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, they drink more, and then their grief gets more intense, or they have more intense grief, and they may drink more. And so that's really an important area to keep in mind, that you're not maybe going to see some of those issues in terms of general college student functioning, but
yeah.
You might see it in terms of what their grief looks like.
And let's remind the listeners, when we're talking about grief, we're talking about death, or it can be non-death, which could be a breakup. It
yes,
could be
absolutely.
A graduation. It could be parents getting divorced.
That's
or
right.
Some kind of failure.
Definitely is focused on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about have you, in your research, what about the percentages of college students? One of the things that I read, because I always try to do the research before I interview anyone, one of the things I read is those college students who are in the first 12 months of grieving the death of a family member or a friend. Can you tell the listeners what the percentage is currently, if you know, and what's the relevance of this for universities?
Range,
say that again.
It does range mm-hmm. from study to study. But we see ranges anywhere from, I mean, in terms of the previous year, it's going to be probably 1 in 4 college students
uh-huh.
you know, who have experienced a death loss in the last year of someone that they, a family member or a friend that they were close with. And if you extend it to 2 years, you're going to be more like 35% to 45%.
Uh-huh.
And what, actually, I just found another, it was new to me about a year ago, a longitudinal study done by Cox in Florida looking at college students over time, and they found actually that each year 30% of students had a death loss. And that was the,
mm-hmm.
we don't have a lot of longitudinal data like that.
Wow.
But those percentages I offered first are pretty consistent across studies. I just did a study
mm-hmm.
when I was on sabbatical at the University of Hawaii in Manoa, and the percentage there was 35% in the prior 2 year period. So.
That's a little bit higher than I would have guessed.
Were
you surprised?
A lot higher than a lot of faculty would guess.
Uh-huh.
You know, because faculty will often, I mean, the majority of those deaths are either grandparent or friend, which
yes.
makes good sense
yes.
in terms of where
yes.
students are developmentally.
Yes.
And then there tends to be a disenfranchisement, you know, a lack of acknowledgement and recognition of the importance of those death losses. I would argue particularly grandparent death.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When students experience the death of a grandparent when they're in college, that is an important death loss, not just for them. They may not have had a strong individual relationship with that grandparent, but they might, you know.
You never know. Mm-hmm.
But they know how significant of a shift that is within their family system. They feel it.
Hmm.
They worry about the parent whose parent died, and they also begin to reflect on what it will be like for them when their own parent dies. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they have those abilities, and they do cognitively, you know, think abstractly about what it will mean for the future for them and for their whole family.
Mm-hmm. I see some students who are dealing with, well, it seems like something will happen or somebody will die, whether it's a friend or a family member, and they will not want help right then, like, for instance, from the counseling center. It's almost too soon, and then maybe it might be 3 or 4 months later that they'll come to the counseling center. Do you see that?
Well, what we often see in the literature, and some of the literature actually on the effectiveness of grief therapy,
mm-hmm.
suggests that after 2 months, is a better time period in terms of how therapy could be useful.
Okay.
But I think also college students are in some ways intuitively aware, and that's a generalization, but I think often grievers are intuitively aware of
yeah.
what they need.
Yeah.
You know, but grief is not a mental health issue so much. I mean, grief is a normative process.
Right.
And so often what we find is college students don't view the counseling center as a best fit source of assistance.
Right, because they look at that as only dealing with mental health issues.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But and I also believe that truly the best mechanism for helping bereaved college students is support groups. I mean,
okay.
I think it's a really important opportunity for them to connect with other grieving peers.
And
getting them to come is there, a whole other issue.
That's what I want to talk about. We're going to take a break right now. Excuse me. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I want to talk about how to make a successful grief support group, because we have tried at the counseling center, and I want to see if you've got any ideas that are different than what we've been doing. Okay? So come back and listen to us. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about college students and grief. My guest is from Purdue University, Dr. Heather Servati-Saib, and we left off before the break talking about some of the best recommendations, I guess, you have to help college students who are grieving, or support groups. Here at the University of Alabama, we've tried to, and we're probably almost at 40,000 students enrolled. We have tried to get support groups off the ground and haven't really had much success with attendance. Do you have any suggestions for starting and sustaining a group?
Well, I have a variety of different ideas that I would offer. The first one is, part of it really is connected to the culture of your campus.
Yeah.
So, for example, here at Purdue, one of our significant, slogans is "Boiler Up."
Yes.
Which doesn't really engender a lot of help seeking.
No.
You might imagine. and so we have tried to use terms that don't suggest help seeking. And so we've had some success with a group we've run the last few years calling it a discussion group.
Okay.
About grief, so that people come to discuss grief, but we don't call it a support group.
Okay.
We don't call it a self-help group. We don't call it those kinds of terms that might be more challenging for people to sort of step up and attend. I do think we've also gotten a lot of referrals from other individuals on campus, the counseling center, because
uh-huh.
we did it as a service learning project within in the group course that I taught. But we get referrals from, we spread the word a lot to advisors,
uh-huh.
to student support or student success offices on campus,
yes.
To the chaplains on campus, and I'm
yes.
sure you've tried some of these issues, but we try to do a combination of changing the title so that it was less sort of stigmatizing
mm-hmm.
in a way from
mm-hmm.
their perspective, perhaps,
right.
and then also trying to reach out to a lot of individuals whom grieving students might, self-disclose to on campus. The other thing I would suggest is campuses where they're really wanting to be connected to grieving students is a grassroots network that's been established in the United States called Actively Moving Forward.
Actively
and
Moving
Forward.
It was
started by a couple of students at Georgetown and now has over 60 chapters at campuses across the country.
Okay.
And it is it becomes a student organization on campus, but as a student organization, it absolutely needs a staff or faculty mentor. And within that organization, there is both a once-a-month group that meets and also service activities that they engage in. One
uh-huh.
of the things that we often see for grieving college students is they don't just want to sit and talk. They want to do something. They want to memorialize in a very active and physical way sometimes. And AMF, Actively Moving Forward, is really connected with that. So for the service activities they do, the grieving students can often get non-bereaved peers to come to those to provide support in a very behavioral way,
uh-huh.
not just as a listener. And that can sort of lead to better relationships for grieving students when their non-bereaved peers can at least support them in that way. The other thing I'd mention is a little bit maybe not what you would expect, but I've been very involved in getting a bereavement leave policy established here at Purdue.
Okay.
So faculty and staff at institutions generally have a bereavement leave policy, but it is not common for universities and colleges to have such policies where students are guaranteed to make up work.
Wow.
Purdue has existed since 2011.
Uh-huh.
I've done a lot of speaking about our bereavement leave policy, and particularly actually at the AMF conferences. And many students who are involved in AMF have begun to advocate for bereavement leave on their policy, bereavement leave policies. And now they have those policies on campus. What that does is when students use the bereavement leave policy, they are self-identifying as a student who is grieving. And what that means is then you have a much more targeted group to reach out to be able to offer support to, and to be able to be connected with.
Okay.
So you're not sending general messages. You're reaching out to students who have specifically requested to use the bereavement leave policy, and so have already, in a way, reached out for assistance.
That's right.
And so they may be more likely to be open to a group. We recently did a study of students who have used the bereavement leave policy here at Purdue, and one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we got from them is, gosh, we sure would like more follow-up about grief.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the
policy was helpful, you know, we got to make up the work, but we would have liked more contact over time.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. That's really a good thing. I don't think we have anything like that here at the University of Alabama, but I'm going to discuss this with my director at the Counseling Center and see if he's ever heard of that, because that is a really good idea as far as trying to, like you said, that it's not like you're picking out students or requiring them to even come to counseling because something happened.
Mm-hmm. But the main purpose of the policy is to give students the guarantee to make up work.
That's right.
Because we have found in other research we've done that their GPAs are affected by a desk loss. And that's a no-brainer for us, right? But in terms of getting a policy passed, we needed to show the University Senate that, you know, there's a real academic connection here. And when we were able to show that data, they were more open to the idea of making bereavement a distinct attendance issue.
Yes.
So now faculty don't have the choice of putting in their syllabus that students can make up, you know, that they can skip, like, drop a grade if they miss a period or things like that. If it's a bereavement situation, the student gets the option to make,
it up.
Regardless of the faculty member's individual attendance policy.
How, you know, you mentioned before the break about grieving is not a mental health issue. When does grief become a mental health issue?
Oh, that's a great question. We know from what we know about the development of mental health diagnoses, you know, a range of them, that death losses or many stressful life events can be the catalyst for the development of more significant mental health diagnoses and conditions. But then I believe that grief functions parallel to that still, that even if, say, a significant death loss is the catalyst for a major depressive episode and major depressive diagnosis, there's still grief that is distinct, that needs to be processed, and the grief is the normative part of that experience from my perspective.
Yes.
Now, there is, of course, within the DSM now, the persistent complex bereavement disorder as a disorder for additional research, and that's good. We need more research. We need to find out more about what kind of a distinct form of grief there might be that could be more prolonged, more intense, and perhaps warrants a separate sort of diagnosis within the DSM.
Is that the same thing as it used to be, complicated grief?
It's connected to that.
Okay.
So there are a number of scholars, researchers, who have been working on some kind of complicated or prolonged, and they've used different terms. And now within the DSM, there's a term that's been used that, and they're apparently now those research teams are going to work to use the same criteria. There's always been significant overlap, but they're going to work to use the same criteria so that their research can be more easily synthesized and we can get a better sense of what's really happening.
If you're listening right now and you want to send a question for Dr. SS, Send the question to Brain Matters Radio at WVUAFM.UA.edu. Dr. SS, Heather, will you take a couple of email questions that we have right now?
Absolutely.
Let me see what we got here. How about, let's see, first person ask, I'm waiting for it to come up. What are some signs that early childhood experiences with grief could be unresolved?
That's a great question.
I know.
Mm-hmm. I think what I would first say, which is an important issue related to childhood bereavement and childhood grief, is that when children experience a death loss, they will grieve as they can based on where they are developmentally.
Mm-hmm.
So say a 5-year-old experiences the death of a parent. They will grieve as a 5-year-old can grieve. They can't grieve as a 20-year-old would. I mean, they can't. It's not where they are developmentally. And as they age over time, their grief will shift with them. As they become different people through development, they will experience their grief differently. They will view their grief differently. It will really be a continuing unfolding of their grief over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think oftentimes people will look at that and perceive it as unresolved, where I would look at it and say, it is a natural part of the unfolding of the developmental journey of grief.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, grief does not end. Now, that's not meant to be a very discouraging kind of statement. I mean, grief is the reflection of love. And just because a person dies doesn't mean we stop loving them. And if we don't stop loving them, then our grief will continue. One of my favorite quotes right now about grief is from Keanu Reeves, one of the great philosophers of our time, who says...
And star of The Matrix.
Right, exactly. He says, grief changes shape, but it does not end. And to me, grief changes shape over time. I think too often we look at those changes of shape over time and judge them as unresolved, when really what we're seeing is the natural progression of a life-changing experience, not a life event, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. You know, with regards to grieving students, how can the campus environment play a role in promoting and enhancing students' adjustment, development, learning, and success? Is there anything a campus can do as a whole?
I think, actually, a bereavement leave policy is a very strong message. I know that's one of my soapboxes, but I have to mention it again.
No.
Because just the existence of the policy on our campus in the Dean of Students' Office, the semester that they implemented it, all calls to the Dean of Students' Office went up. And I read that as the students learning that the Dean of Students' Office is responsive to their needs, that office provides some assistance that maybe they hadn't even thought was possible before.
Yeah.
And so I think those kinds of policies do send a very positive message about the campus being a compassionate place that acknowledges that students are not just brains. They are whole people with challenging life experiences, death being just one of them.
So let's make it clear, we're not talking about non-death experiences. I mean, we understand that's loss, and there will be mourning for a divorce or for breakups, but we're not talking about that for a bereavement leave policy, right?
We're not.
Okay, I just wanted to make that clear.
Policy, I do mean very specifically death losses.
Yes.
But the other experiences are can be as significant depending on the particular death loss or the particular breakup. I mean, and oftentimes with breakup, I'll just add that it can be so disenfranchised for being college students, because so many of the messages that they get are, you're young, there'll be another relationship, they'll look beyond this, rather than it being the kind of a developmental milestone and turning point for them that's very, very meaningful and powerful. So in terms of death losses and how campuses can be supportive, one of the other things that Purdue does, and other campuses, of course, do as well, and you may do there, is a kind of annual memorial service recognition
we do.
Of death losses that have occurred on the campus.
Yes. I think we do that actually twice a year.
Staff who have died, and once a year in particular, Purdue sets aside time, and it's called Golden Taps, and it's a very meaningful recognition of those losses.
Yeah, we do. I think we do. I want to say we do one per semester even,
yeah,
but maybe it's
even
once
better,
a year.
I think it's even better. The other thing I think is that, and often institutions of the size of Purdue and of Alabama, they can't not have these, but campuses need to have standardized protocols for how they handle when death losses happen on campus.
Yes, yes. And that's what I wanted to ask you, too, since you mentioned Dean of Students. Death notification also.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the chapters in the book, our book you mentioned,
yes.
Assisting Bereaved College Students.
Yes.
And, my colleague, Lou Ann Hamilton, who was in the Dean of Students office here, wrote that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It's very practical, as you said, very important. I do want to clarify that I am the Associate Dean of Student Life, but only in the Honors College here at Purdue. I'm not the Dean of Students overall.
Okay.
Just in the Honors College.
Yeah. So go ahead and talk a little bit about what you just mentioned about when a death occurs on campus. Especially, can you touch on a suicide on campus?
Well, and there is also a very particular chapter on that. It was in the Assisting Bereaved College Students book.
Uh-huh.
There are particular issues, of course, around suicide. One of the most important of which is the critical need for parallel education around any messages that are sent about the death. A real focus on the need for those who are experiencing similar thoughts or feelings that might lead them to suicidal actions.
Yes.
Where resources are to communicate, the need to communicate with others, that there are, you know, support and resources.
Yes.
That is a significant issue in that situation.
What about, go ahead.
I think it doesn't work to say nothing.
Right.
But it also doesn't work to handle it in the same way that you might handle any other death loss that would happen on a campus.
Yeah, you can also say too much. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any information on, you know, what advice that people can give to friends and family members on how to best help a college-age loved one who's grieving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what suggestions do you have?
Right. And the suggestions that I would offer, just to be, you know, as practical as I can, are really from what I've learned from grieving college students and the research that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big things that they talk about is being empathic rather than you know, offering sympathy.
Yes.
You know, saying you're sorry.
Yes.
Is not as helpful.
It doesn't.
As one of the people within our most recent book said, the most helpful friend was the friend who came and sat next to her and said, "Tell me everything.
Yeah.
Don't hold anything back. I'm willing to hear it all." And that's just so meaningful. And even when I think about it myself, I still get a little teary about reading that aspect of that student's narrative. Because, you know, students, they need open support without pitying, you know, right from the start.
Yes.
And they need the support to keep going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They need people to understand that grief is not a linear process. And any sort of indication that it is not going to be helpful to them.
No.
Anything about you should or you will, those statements are just too directive.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about
And most of the time it really angers the person. I mean, the students I have talked to who have experienced that, and people, you know, they're not trying to hurt the person's feelings, but they just don't know what else to say. But they will say, just like what you said, you need to do this, this, and this, or, you know, and it just angers the person who's grieving.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that for me is broader than college students, but I think it's specific to them in a way, too, because they might hear it more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that grieving people know that you have no clue how they feel.
No.
So offering them advice
is not good.
Absolutely counter to what it is that they're experiencing.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, even if you've had the death loss of a parent, say, or a sibling, you know, you are a different person from that college student, and you had a different relationship with that important individual who died. So sending any kind of message about you know what needs to happen or what they need to do
Mm-mm.
is not going to be useful or perceived as helpful by them.
That's right.
It just is not a good fit.
I think it'll shut them down also. It will make them not reach out to that person too.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can communicate messages of how complicated their grief must be and how deep it must go, you know, if you're very clear about your sense of your sense of needing to hear from them in order to understand their grief experience, that's going to make a big difference. They appreciate when people are open, though, to talking about grief.
Definitely.
You know, so avoiding
yes,
it is not helpful either. Just offering those important windows for conversation, even asking questions about the person who died and displaying, you know,
yep.
a sense of interest around them.
That's right. And
you
I
know,
think it goes back...
Something special about them.
It goes back to what we mentioned at the beginning of the show. I think that's why a lot of college students feel isolated and alone, because their peers just cannot go there with them. They just are scared they're going to upset them, but they really want to talk about whoever it is who passed away, you know, or who died.
And I think mm-hmm. one of my students did a study once where we wanted to get away from that issue. The issue is not what you say.
Right.
It's how well you listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so her study was all focused on what would help you to listen to a grieving peer, mm-hmm. not what would help you talk to them.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to shift that frame of reference from there being the idea that there's some kind of magic bullet word that you can say that's going to fix everything, which is just not possible. Grief is not
just
a thing you fix.
No, it's not going to happen.
It isn't. It's an unfolding, you know, normative experience. It really is about being there to help them to express all of what they may be experiencing, and to be present with that in a non-judgmental kind of way, to help them find their path by being okay with just being present and listening to them.
You know, you mentioned the book, We Get It, that you wrote, and I suppose you can buy that anywhere or get it at your local library, or
yeah,
I hope so.
Amazon. And we worked hard to make it reasonably priced.
Oh, good.
Because you know, the primary audience is grieving students themselves, but
mm-hmm.
I got to say, doing this study made me a better clinician, no question.
Yeah. Do you have any more important...
Their words and their stories.
Do you have any more ideas or suggestions for books or information or handouts or websites, you know, for mm-hmm. colleges that can enhance students' adjustment?
Well, I definitely do recommend actively moving forward, even without a chapter. The website has really excellent information. David Balk has a book about working with bereaved college students and what college students experience. I don't have the title with me right now. I'm in
okay.
the head office. But his book is excellent. In terms of books for college students, you know, we need more.
Uh-huh.
We need more.
Is there a trend in this kind of research?
What's that?
Is there a trend? Are there any new trends in this kind of research?
Well, actually, my comment about grandparents is from a study I just read.
Uh-huh.
And it was a qualitative study looking at the experience of grandparent death, because we don't have, even though it's the most common death loss that college students experience, we don't have a lot of research on it. And so it makes sense then that people tend to minimize that experience for college students.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious about, you know, doing more research in that area.
We're going to take another break, Heather, and we'll be back. I want to ask you, it'll be for our last segment. We'll probably only have time for one more question, but I want to ask you about some strategies that we can use to help grieving students specifically. So when we come back, we're talking about grief in college students, and you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about grief in college students. I think Caroline made a great choice for a song just after the break, or just before the break, actually, Tom Petty, who just died yesterday, actually, rock and roll legend, in my day at least, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers is what they were called, but some great songs, and he'll be missed. My guest tonight is Dr. Heather Sarvadi-Saib, and she is from Purdue University. We were talking about, we have been talking about grief, mourning, college students, bereavement, some different terms. What are some of the strategies, Heather, that we can use to help students who are grieving specifically?
Some specifics. I think it's really important to think about the individuals, you know, and mm-hmm. keep in mind who they are as people and what they will connect with most.
Yeah.
I think one thing is to really send that message that you know their grief is unique.
Right.
You know, that you know that what they're experiencing is different from what others may be experiencing, and that, encouraging them to really accept that uniqueness mm-hmm. Rather than expecting themselves to follow some kind of stage theory. It's not helpful to give college students stage theories. It's more helpful to communicate to them in sort of a narrative kind of way or a sense-making kind of way that what grief is about is, you know, that life-changing experience and
right.
figuring out who they are now, how they see the future now, how their story is different now that this person has died. And using more of that narrative sort of language with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, other things are, you know, remembering the day that the person died.
That's right.
A very practical
the anniversary.
Uh-huh. We're working with grieving college students. Here within the Honors College, we've started, because we know when students use a bereavement leave policy, we send them cards. We made up cards that have the logo on it, and we send them a card. College students still care about tangible sort of efforts related to recognizing their grief. You know, they're good with emails, they're good with other kinds of social media, but when push comes to shove, they also perceive those tangible kinds of messages as very helpful and supportive.
Yes, and sincere too.
Yes, very sincere.
One of the chapters in the source book that I mentioned, training faculty members and resident assistants to respond to bereaved students. And one of the suggestions, yes, was offer tangible support, take time to listen, which you've already mentioned, observe and inquire, but also refer as necessary. How do you know when to refer a student for help?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, I think it's some of the things that we've already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're seeing in them observable changes. You can tell they're not sleeping. You can tell they may not. Have they lost weight? Are they not really present in class? You know,
mm-hmm.
they're there,
mm-hmm.
but they're not really there.
Yeah.
Have they made any fleeting sort of comments that indicate they might be thinking about ending their lives?
Yeah.
You know, you have to be very observant of those kinds of messages and that kind of information and observation, and take it seriously.
Yes.
And be able to reach out to the students and, you know, refer to those very specific issues, express your concern, and then advocate that for them however is possible on your campus. Here at Purdue, we have a student of concern process where anyone on campus can submit a student of concern report.
Yes. Yeah.
And to the dean of students' office, mm-hmm, and that
mm-hmm.
office will reach out to that student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, it's best to tell the student that you believe that the dean of students' office or the counseling center, however it works on a certain
yeah.
campus, could be very helpful to them and would have resources that could be useful to them, and then, you know, be able to get them in touch with those offices on campus that can provide that support to them. And so you're really looking for those kinds of observations. They're just, you can obviously see through what they say or how they look that they're just not functioning well.
Right, right. Finally, and I've wanted to get to this, one of the articles I read suggests a campus-based bereavement center. Do you have that on the campus of Purdue University? What do you think about that? How would it work, and how would it be beneficial?
I mean, I love that idea.
I know, I do too.
David Balk has championed for that idea. I think I don't know how it can happen. You know, I mean, it's just kind of a challenge to
yeah.
think about how you can have a separate unit like that within a college or university setting.
Mm-hmm.
I think what might make it more possible if it had some you know, which he talks about, some clear research initiatives connected with it as well. But I've tried, and I've not been able to establish something like that here at Purdue. But what I often think about with it is there needs to be an office on campus that is a champion for grief issues.
Right.
And on our campus, I really do think it's the Dean of Students Office, because they are the ones that manage the bereavement leave policy.
Yes.
And so they do reach out to students. I also think our advisors here on campus, who know students quite well, can often be advocates for them. And so are there subunits on campus that can serve that role, even if there isn't a more centralized kind of unit that's specifically and solely focused on grief and bereavement issues?
That's an excellent point. You're giving me some ideas to discuss with our director, because I think it's needed. And I think that's, you know, students who are grieving are a population who sometimes go unnoticed, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where there's some publications focused that call it the silent epidemic.
That's right.
It's
that's
something
right.
that's just not talked about, but it's definitely...
It's there.
Almost everywhere we turn on
that's
college
right.
campuses.
That's right. Thank you so much for being my guest tonight. This has gone by very fast. It always does. But I really appreciate it. I think this is a topic that needs to be discussed way more than just on this radio show, and hopefully we'll do that here at the University of Alabama some more. Thank you.
I sure hope so. Thank you for inviting me. I always enjoy being able to talk about the importance of working to meet the needs of grieving college students.
Yep, I agree with that. Hey, listeners, don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted on the audioboom.com website. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. You can also go to the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu and link with the Audio Boom website. I want to remind everyone, we do have an event coming up this Sunday, October the 2nd through the 8th. That's this week. Is the University of Alabama Suicide Awareness Week. And during that week, or this week basically, there will be activities held around campus daily to promote awareness of suicide while also promoting prevention. As the anchor event of the UA's Suicide Awareness Week, the Counseling Center will host its 8th annual Out of the Darkness Tuscaloosa Community Walk. You can, it'll be held this Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Ferguson Center Plaza. If you want to know more information about the walk, go to counseling.ua.edu/aware.cfm, and we hope to see you there. Let me make another quick announcement. I always like to thank those individuals who've helped make the show possible. Of course, our executive director, Dr. Lee Keys at the Counseling Center, Terry Siggers of the Office of Student Media, my production assistants tonight, Catherine Howell and Caroline Harris, and Lizzie, I can't remember Lizzie's last name. She just started tonight, but she'll be back many more evenings to help with the show. And I want to thank my colleagues at the Counseling Center who are always so supportive, the WVUA staff, and my guest tonight, Dr. Heather Servati-Sibe. Next week, we'll be talking with Chad Berry of the Capstone International Center here on campus about studying abroad and mental health issues, so that should be interesting. Don't forget that Brain Matters will go to a call-in format beginning in November. Thanks again for listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. Houndstooth and Hard Hats is up next.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency,